Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It is Dave Plyer with you here on 720 WGN. Nostalgia Digest magazine, one of my favorite periodicals to read every quarter, is turning 45 years old. There's a couple different covers, collectible covers this month. There's great stories on the Wizard of Oz, Chicago's great hotels, and so much more. And joining us again is the editor-in-chief, and that is Steve Darnell. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
I am delightful. 45 years. You don't look a day over 42.
Thank you. You're very kind, and perhaps you need your vision checked.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But Chuck Shaden, our buddy Chuck Shaden, is the one that started this whole thing, you know, almost five decades ago.
Yes. It's amazing. I mean, Chuck began the Nostalgia Digest back in 1974, really as a place to list the schedule for the many radio shows he was hosting, in addition to Those Were the Days, which is still on the air, of course, but he was hosting others. And over time, it sort of grew into this marvelous 64-page quarterly that had room for a lot of articles on a lot of topics. You cited a couple just now. When I took over, my goodness, and that's 14 years ago now, one of the reasons I did is because Chuck and his writers had shown me and that nostalgia was a very broad umbrella, and it's really been very gratifying to think that we've been able to do this publication for this long and as a result cover as many topics in a single issue as we have. We've been very fortunate.
I have a great little story that I don't know if I've shared with you before, but at one of my holiday parties that you and Chuck were at, my uncle, who passed away a few years ago, brought me a gift, and they were wrapped with a bow, and the outside of the box said Playboy, and I thought, oh, I don't know if I want these, but when I opened them up, they were his entire collection, pretty much from day one of Nostalgia Digest magazine.
Wow.
That he has been collecting, and I kind of dig back sometimes, and I go back and look at some of these articles, and he said to me, you know, he goes, you know, Chuck started writing this, you know, at the time maybe it was 40 years ago, and, you know, that's one guy I've always wanted to meet, and he was standing behind him. I said, well, there he is right there. Go talk to him and go say hello, and that turned into a half-hour conversation. But, you know, it's beloved by many because it's just always so much fun to look back in time because, as you said, you know, everyone has their own era of nostalgia, but it's always very educational as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, you and I are of a certain age, and there are people older than us and younger than us that have a different definition, as you say, of what nostalgia is. And there's room for all those things. I mean, the new issue has, as you mentioned, it's got articles about The Wizard of Oz, which turned 80 this year. It's got articles about Chicago hotels and their golden age. It's also got an article about the making of Rankin Bass's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's got an article about the career of William Bendix. It's got an article about Michigan football in the 1940s.
Vincent, you know, Price. You got Vincent Price in
Price,
here.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff in here. Wizard of Oz, because it's so connected to so many people. First of all, I think this is the first time you did a collectible cover, which I just loved. I have two of two. I guess I have to go.
Why should Entertainment Weekly get all the fun?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I love it. I love that you did that. But, you know, when you think about how iconic this movie this was, and for yours and my generation, obviously we didn't see it in the theater, but when we saw it on CBS every single year, it was appointment viewing, and there was no DVD players. There was no other way to really watch this show. And if you missed it, you missed it till next year, right?
Absolutely, yes. And now you can imagine how it felt to be a moviegoer in 1939 and think, man, if you don't get to the theater, who knows if you'll ever see it again.
Right, exactly.
And it's such an amazing film. You know, we like to think, as we publish this magazine, that most of what we write about has a reason to endure. But you think about The Wizard of Oz and you realize 80 years later, it is a film that still crosses over every generation and still has an appeal. And that's a real testament to the people involved. And that's Matthew Hoffman, the fellow who wrote the cover story for the Digest, you know, I think he captured what it was that and what it is that's magical about that film. And also, of course, a little bit about the context in which it was produced, you know, and that's so a little bit of history and a little bit of magic. And that's what we're always trying to capture in every issue.
Well, you think about the use of color and black and white. And that's just one thing I want to touch upon from the story is you think how impactful that was at that time. I mean, color still, it was 1939. Color still wasn't very prominent in all of this, but it created such an impact to say, okay, here's reality. And then here is fantasy. You know, Judy Garland, that wasn't her real name. That wasn't her first. That wasn't her born name.
No, she was Frances Gum, I think.
This is horrible. I mean, who the hell would put that on a moniker, right?
I think she got the better name out of it. But, you know, that being said, yes, it was a different time. You know, I'm sure Frances Gum today would be on a marquee somewhere, but.
Yeah, you know, and I think about Judy Garland, and you know the story, and the movie came out not long ago about her about her life, and for people that really didn't have in depth knowledge of her, I mean, she was really what was the first child star that really, you know, took her to the dark depths of life and ended her life so early because she was just. You know, she was as beautiful as she was, as a big star that she was. I mean, she was working at 2.5 years old and kind of drug through all those years in the studio. And they used to be concerned about her weight. And, you know, she'd be a kid wanting to have a hamburger or a hot dog. They'd feed her cottage cheese and chicken soup. I mean, you know, behind the scenes wasn't as glamorous as what was on stage.
No, that's true. When you say drug, you're using past tense of dragged.
Yes, I am. yes, I am.
It is unfortunate, and I'm sure it's for a lot of people, it's probably difficult to watch a film like this without thinking of that. On the other hand, you know, the Nostalgia Digest has always been about celebrating the work. You know, somebody actually wrote us a while back and said, you know, why don't you detail, you know, how these people died when you write about them? And it's like, well, because who would want that to be the way you remember them, you know?
Right, yeah.
I'm just so thrilled we have this film to write about. And, yes, you can. It's there are certainly aspects of Judy Garland's career that took unfortunate turns and her life that took unfortunate turns. And no one would wish that on anybody.
No.
But thankfully, you know, we can also remember her for films like The Wizard of Oz, which is still an absolute masterpiece.
Absolutely. You talk about primetime, crime time, the challenges and rewards of presenting the FBI on radio. Very interesting thought on that.
Thank you. Yeah, it was. This was, of course, this tied into our Those Were the Days radio show. But yes, before Dragnet, there were shows that attempted to offer step-by-step examinations of crime solving. And of course, in the 1930s, when gangsters were almost celebrities, it made perfect sense for radio to try to tell the stories of how those, you know, the most villainous of villains were brought to justice, whether it was through a hail of bullets, as in the case of John Dillinger, or, you know, simply by tracking them down and arresting them. And J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI, for whatever reason, didn't really fancy the idea of his agency's stories being dramatized for radio. And so there were shows like Gangbusters and the FBI in Peace and War. And he really kind of dragged his feet on the idea of cooperating with them. And in some cases, disavowed them entirely. And then there was one show called This Is Your FBI, which apparently he loved and supported entirely, and it invited the show's writers to come in and examine the latest technology, the crime-solving technologies the FBI was using. So, I mean, it's fascinating what was accomplished in the course of dramatizing the FBI's exploits on radio because it made that agency far more prominent in our lives than it could have been. And again, you know, J. Edgar Hoover certainly leaves behind a difficult legacy to grapple with. But again, that's not something that people were thinking about in the 1940s and 50s when these shows were on the air.
No, and you think about that, and that's the rip from the headline stories. That's what most of television is these days. So it was really groundbreaking in that way as well.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, you have an article, A Few Moments with Ed Ames, and you know, for those of you who don't know who Ed Ames is, the thing for me, and this is even before my time and your time, Steve, is that he was on The Tonight Show. He threw a tomahawk. It hit that stand-up in the we'll just say in the crotch, instead of, you know, I'm sure that's fine for 2:30 in the morning. But like, he hit him right in between the legs, and that's what he's known for. I couldn't tell you, Steve, who he is.
Well. One of the reasons we wanted to talk to him is because he'd had this amazing career that extended far beyond an errant tomahawk throw.
Right.
You know, he sang with the big bands, with his brothers. He sang with Art Mooney and Russ Morgan. He sang with Mahalia Jackson. He was on Broadway with Kirk Douglas in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was on television, of course, on the Daniel Boone Show. And, yes, we had a chance to sit down and talk with him last year, and then we excerpted it this year in the magazine. But he really had a fascinating career, and great to hear him talk about his early days in radio, which going back to some 70 years now in Boston. And in fact, in the digest, he talks a little bit about how he and his brothers came to New York with these Boston accents singing popular songs, you know, like, and I can't stand, you know.
That's funny.
And, of course, the audience just erupted in laughter at these Brahmin New England accents. Well, like I say, that's been one of the joys of this publication is putting it together with the help of some very talented writers and, of course, you know, interview subjects like Ed Ames, and the wonderful challenge of seeing an article that's going in and thinking, the next article chronologically should be totally different from this one.
Yeah.
Let's find that article next. And you do.
Always a nice variety. Absolutely.
And yeah, sometimes things come in at the last minute, and I'm really proud of the chance to put a magazine like this together, and it's great fun. You know, it's like putting your baseball cards on the floor to make a team.
So before we take a break here, why don't you tell folks how they can get it? Because it is the holidays. If you got somebody that really loves nostalgia, it's a great gift. Go ahead, buddy.
It's a perfect gift. You can order a Nostalgia Digest by subscription. 1 year is $17, 2 years is $30. You can order at nostalgiadigest.com or by phone at 773-769-6575. Can we talk about the special offer?
Yeah, please.
If you order a 2-year subscription, 8 issues, $30, and in the course of placing your order, you mention WGN, we will include with your first issue a set of Carl Amari's Twilight Zone radio shows on CD. We've got a four-show set, and
he's got a warehouse of them.
No,
I'm kidding.
He says they're a $27 value.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
and
those
we'll
are great. Those were great because you think about this. Twilight Zone was never a radio show.
It was never dramatized on radio. Carl did this back in the 90s, and there's some terrific people on here. And yes, if you order a 2-year subscription, mention WGN, we'll throw in the Twilight Zone set absolutely free. So yes, if you've never subscribed before, this is our introductory offer, and hope you'll take advantage of it. And again, nostalgiadigest.com or 773-769-6575.
All right, we're going to talk about Chicago's coolest hotels, the most classic hotels, and a few other things coming up next with Steve Darnell from Nostalgia Digest at 720 WGN. So we're talking to Steve Darnell of Nostalgia Digest magazine. Wizard of Oz is on the cover. Do you know that the song was initially deleted from the film?
Yeah, I did not. I mean, I know it was on
crazy?
The bubble. I didn't know it was out entirely.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So one of the articles, and I always find an article that I say is my favorite of each issue. It's the article about Chicago's, really the palaces of Chicago, the most beautiful hotels. And Roger, I want you to jump into this because He thought you were coming in here today, Steve, but he's got a little something for you. But one of the hotels you feature is the Morrison Hotel, which I didn't know much about. And Roger just handed me something from that hotel. Tell me about this, Roger.
Well, my dad worked there in the early 30s, so it was the home for mobsters. It was the home for the Chicago Democratic machine. And for about 30 years, it was the world's tallest hotel. It was built in several stages and had over 2,200 rooms. So, Steve, I have a set for you, and I gave one to...
You won a prize, Steve!
Yeah, look at that, for you! So my dad worked there, basically when he was working there, and his father worked there too, my grandfather, the Morrison Hotel. So he did elevator work. He ran the elevators. But when they started to close the place up, because it was demolished in 1965, he got some stuff from the bars. I have here a very long stem metal swizzle stick with a beer bottle opener at the other end. It says Morrison Hotel Chicago on one side, the world's tallest hotel on the other. And then I have two beer bottle openers. One is says a case of good judgment, Edelweiss beer, which is a very old beer. And the other one is has a picture. An etching, if I can call it an etching, would you call it that?
Sure, I would.
Okay, an etching of a beer bottle, Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer.
There you go. There you go.
So I have a whole set for you.
That's really lovely, Roger. Thank you. I could tell you, we have something of a collection of swizzle sticks, my wife and I, that my grandfather acquired from his travels as as an engineer. So it is fascinating to think, like, yes, this is when hotels really would go out of their way to establish their identity, and you would be invited to take things like napkins and swizzle sticks, and they would very prominently have a logo or a name on them.
Well, here's what's really wild, too, is like, you know, you think about the Palmer House and the Drake Hotel, that, you know, that those are most common, but you really go through a ton of hotels in here that, you know, that were raised in the 1920s or 40s or 60s that came and went pretty quickly, like 1914, the Bismarck Hotel, raised and rebuilt in 1926, closed in 96. I mean, there's some really great history here.
Well, yeah, and Greg Borzo, who wrote the piece that we used in the Autumn Nostalgia Digest, found a lot of great stuff. And yes, it's amazing how many of these large hotels, you know, were built up and came down, of course, in many cases. And the amount of spectacle that they would employ. I mean, we know from those were the days that a lot of the big bands played at the hotel ballrooms,
right,
and those were broadcast on the radio.
Absolutely.
And, of course, you know about fine dining or drinking, in this case, as we're talking about the Morrison Hotel. But the Morrison Hotel also had, at one time, an ice carnival.
Yeah, I saw that.
Literally, an ice skating review for entertaining diners. I mean, who does that?
You can get that over at the Chili's in Bolingbrook.
Oh, really?
I'm just telling you. Yeah, that's happening right now as we speak. It's happening
right now as we speak. And I understand hot dogs tried it too, but man, there's so many elbow injuries, it wasn't funny.
Exactly. Now, Steve actually goes around to local libraries and talks about these great stories. Tell us about what you got coming up, Steve.
Yes, thank you. I do. I talk at libraries about the golden age of radio. This week I've got a couple talks about radio in World War II. Wednesday night at 7 p.m. I'm at the Glenview Public Library. Thursday night at 7 p.m. I'm at the St. Charles Public Library. And a week from now, Sunday, the 17th, I'll be talking about radio in the Great American Songbook at the Oak Brook Public Library. And there'll be some sound clips related to the subject. Some background information. It's great fun. It's really lovely to get to meet an audience firsthand. As you know, you sit in the studio and you assume people listen to you, but that's a very different thing from people coming up to you and saying, I listen to you, and you can thank them directly. But yes, the whole list of our upcoming appearances can be found on the main page at nostalgiadigest.com. And, of course, that's where you can order Nostalgia Digest magazine.
That's right. Again, if for 2 years, it's $30. And then you can also get, if you mentioned WGN, you can get a Twilight Zone CD sent to you from Carl Amari. So that's very cool as well. Steve, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, David. It's always great fun talking with you. And thank you, Roger, for your gift. I can't wait to see it.
Sounds good. We'll get it to you.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. All right.